go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour, a minute past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. We will remain in Eastern Daylight Time for another 22 days or so. And, it's a minute past 6. And you know what? When it's Eastern Standard Time, it'll still be starting at 6 o'clock because it's, you know, cool like that. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go to jump into the chat room for the evening's festivities in the multimedia madcap extravaganza. This is The Horn chat room. Good evening to early arrivals, Earther and Chug-a-Punch and Texas T, capably moderated by longtime indefatigable and veteran chat room moderator Sparky. We are off and rolling. Yes, indeed. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is the ninth day of October 2015. It's Friday on the front porch. Yes. And I was told toward the end of the program last night, Sparky informed me, that our dear friend Mike Malloy will be not live behind the mic this evening. And so, consequently, if you want, and this is entirely up to you, if you want, we can have a bit of an extended, epic Friday on the Front Porch, Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable overtime. But that's if you want it. I'm leaving it up to you. Of course, this is and always has been and will continue to be for as long as it exists, barring some sort of email from progressive organization that wants to sponsor us, a listener-supported operation. And by listener-supported, I don't mean that we put on a fundraising drive every 6 days and then rely on Lockheed Martin or Grumman or other people who bomb brown people or produce hydrocarbons or anything like that for the bulk of the funding. No, this ain't NPR. This is entirely sponsored by y'all. And, you know, if you've got a message, I'm happy to share it with folks. And there's still an offer outstanding for just as a premium, as a way of us saying thank you for anyone who does have a show on me, a copy of, or one of, a handful of Last Mountain movie posters that I happen to have on hand. And that's available for a have a show on me contribution of $200. Because that's what we try to raise every evening, $200. But most of you already know that, unless you're really, really new to the program. If you want to help keep things going, you can go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, click then, fill out the fields, everything except who you work and who you, where you work and who you work for and all that silly crap that PayPal put into the widget. It's not necessary. You can just ignore it, bypass it, and get to the next screen, and that's where you do your PayPal, credit card, et cetera, stuff. And that's how we keep all of this going. And like I said, have for years on end. So we'll try to raise $200 this evening. Heck, if we could jump out front and get a little bit ahead on next week, that'd be groovy too. But it's entirely up to you, not me. So here in about an hour's time, okay, more like 56 minutes, we'll get started on the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable part of the program. I'm sure that Sparky has already put up the bat signal and thrown out the breadcrumbs for finding the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group. If you've never participated but you'd like to, it's easy enough to do. You just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you set up and rolling, and you'll be part of the larger conversation. Kind of a grim and creepy last 24 hours or so, I'm afraid to say. Well, I regret to say, I'm not afraid. No, it's the people with the guns that I'm afraid of. I just regret to note that. Let's see, a shooting with one dead and three wounded at Northern Arizona University last night, followed early this morning by a shooting situation at Texas Southern University, which, by the way, ain't one of them sissified gun-free zones, neither. And yet, as Tony pointed out on my Facebook page, where was the good guy with the gun? Must not have been able to get the drop on the bad guy with the gun, I guess. And there was a situation reported in North Carolina. I'm going to start using, and I started today, in reference to these things, I'm going to use the hashtag, and you're free to jump in on it, too. It'd be kind of cool if it turned into a thing. Because it's an accurate reflection of the world we live in now, here in the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. You know, America. We have an NRA death lottery. That's that roulette wheel I've been talking about for the last couple of months. You want to play Powerball, you want to play Mega Millions and take your 1 in 911 bajillion chance that you're going to win a few million dollars. You do that voluntarily. You pay the money, you get to play. You pay your money, you get your ticket. You cannot win if you do not play. I like to think of it as an involuntary tax, or a voluntary tax on the inordinately optimistic. But the NRA death lottery, everybody plays whether you want to or not. Because here in Merca, you just don't know. I mean, I'm sure no one in Flagstaff, Arizona, was thinking, well, some kid's going to blow away one fraternity member and shoot three more last night. Nobody sits around thinking about that. Nobody got up this morning at Texas Southern University and thought there was going to be a shooter situation. Nobody thought that at Umpqua Community College. And you're not thinking it where you are, and I'm not thinking it where I am, except we are. We're cognizant of what a dangerous place the National Rifle Association has made the United States. No, it's not entirely the National Rifle Association, but they own a lot of it. They own a whole lot of it. So that's why I say that, you know, we have an NRA, hashtag NRA death lottery. Somebody's grandma, somebody's child, somebody's wife, somebody's husband, somebody's cousin, somebody's neighbor, somebody's uncle, somebody's old college chum. Yeah. Just don't know where. Don't know when. But we do know it's going to happen because this country and, not all of us, but a significant enough group of us value firearms more than we value our neighbors and our communities. I mean, for instance, and I don't know, my suggestion? Stay away from Ben Carson. Don't get anywhere near him. Even if you've got the morbid curiosity to go to a Ben Carson event wherever you are, don't. Because if something happens, Ben's going to throw your ass in front of the bullets or tell the shooter to shoot you instead of him. Because that's just the kind of guy he is. We know a little bit more about the young white male who shot four, killed one in Flagstaff, Arizona in the last 24 hours. It was about 2 years ago when Stephen Jones, and, you know, screw this business of, well, I'm not going to say his name. I'm not going to, screw that. People need to know names. Names are part of the whole who, what, when, where, why, how of journalism, in fact. Stephen Jones, it was a couple of years ago when he posted over at Instagram a picture of himself holding a shotgun. He captioned the photo, another photo at a shooting range. It's a full auto kind of day. That was with an automatic rifle of some sort. A buddy of his said, you're a turd. Stephen Jones responded, turd with a gun, and used a pair of pistol emojis, to punctuate his response. This was Stephen Jones's freshman year at Northern Arizona University. And last night, some sort of altercation broke out in front of Mountain View Hall, which is where most of the fraternities and sororities are housed. Colin Bro, Nicholas Prado, Kyle Zientek, and Nicholas Peering were all members of Delta Chi fraternity. Whatever the altercation was, Stephen Jones waded into the middle of it with a handgun and started blazing away. Colin Bro is dead. Nicholas Prado, Kyle Zientek, and Nicholas Peering were all shot and taken to the hospital. According to the Arizona Sun, one witness said, we just left a party and were standing in the street getting ready to walk home when a guy walked up with a pistol and just started shooting. Colin Bro was dead before his fraternity brothers could tackle this young protector of freedom. Wolverines. But he was taken into custody. Presumably he will be charged with cold-blooded murder. Stephen Jones apparently took several photos of himself with firearms. Another one with him holding a loaded shotgun on his shoulder, and wearing an American flag tank top and a hat with an American flag stuck in it. And he titled the selfie "America." Lots of pictures with firearms. There's another one with an AK-47. He captured it in the woods alone with an AK-47. Hashtag gonna kill shit. At Northern Arizona University, they said, well, at least this wasn't a mass shooting. This was more like your murder. Christopher Anderson is with the Northern Arizona University Police, and he said, well, this is very different than the Oregon situation. It appears this was not a targeting of campus. No, he was just allowed to keep firearms on campus so he could have one handy if he decided to go down and reduce the Delta Chi chapter's membership by 4. But, you know, you're not really free if you don't have the opportunity, then the wherewithal to take somebody's life on a whim now, are you? No. President Obama went to Roseburg, Oregon, where a whole bunch of right-wingers said, "You ain't welcome here!" Oh, yeah, it got real sick real fast. Let's see, what do I got here? Let's check in with Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America. Apparently there's a radio program out there called Armed America Radio. You can only imagine what an exercise in delight that is to listen to. Oh, you're not going to have to use your imagination. I got it right here. Larry Pratt from Gun Goobers of America talking to Mark Walters about Barack Obama's response to the slaughter in Roseburg, Oregon.
I think the Democrat Party has, I say, uncloaked. They've uncloaked themselves. This is a progressive, liberal, socialist machine now. When I saw Barack Obama's speech after Oregon, there was no doubt in my mind that he was, in fact, shaken up. He was, in fact, angry. And he believed what he said, but not for the reasons Americans think, Larry. He's only upset and ticked off that he can't get anybody's guns because of that pesky parchment paper. If he was, in fact, concerned about crime, he'd be having that same conversation on the bully pulpit every single day regarding Chicago's numbers.
Oh, of course, yeah. 34 seconds in before we got a mention of Chicago. And no, I will not use the night Chicago died as a bumper, and you can't make me. That's just awful. That pesky parchment paper. Of course, your host there, Mark Walters, is trying to be cute and referring to the Constitution of the United States, which Mark Walters thinks consists primarily and only of the Second Holy Amendment. But we're only 34 seconds into this. Oh, you might want a hockey puck. Just saying. Not saying, just saying. Yeah, because you do that when you're a professional broadcaster. You say stupid shit like that. Not saying, just saying.
Right. Need us to complete their agenda. They need to disarm America. They can't do it. Isn't that what's really got him fired up?
Now, wait a minute. Okay, so these goobs, these almost always white paranoid males are always worrying about disarming America. Can somebody pretty please explain to me what goes on after the disarming of America? Now, of course, right-wingers are not welcome on this program because I don't particularly cotton to listening to the blithering drivel of idiots. But what's going to happen after they disarm America? This is a serious question. This is not rhetorical because I'd like to have some help here. After the liberal, communist, socialist, fascist, Kenyan, Muslim, you slurper, disarms America, what? Are they going to start just mowing people down in the street? Are we going to put all the right wingers up against the wall and just do some right wing cleansing? I got to thinking about when I listened to this clip earlier. Disarm America. Because, if you are, say, 250, 300 years ago, well, wait, 400 years ago, if you're a little English profiteering colony clinging to an outpost on in the swampy ground of Virginia or up in the Massachusetts Bay somewhere, and you're stealing land from people who don't particularly want to have it stolen from you, and yet have somehow or another managed to still welcome you as a fellow human being, I guess you want some firearms because you might need to kill some of those heretofore welcoming natives if you need to, you know, steal some more land. Okay, Carol, I guess that's what it is. After the disarming, don't be stupid. FEMA re-education camps! But that's all they got. Some sort of big roundup, I guess. And the problem is there is no evidence to support that whatsoever, because the same Constitution that protects their right to gather guns unto them is the same same Constitution that says, you know, a search warrant can't be executed but upon probable cause, and that you still have a right to against self-incrimination, and a right to a trial by jury, and a right to free speech and to peaceably assemble. Like I said, it's a serious question. What comes after that? Steve in New York says we've lost. He says, I've listened to the anti-Muslim on the beach portion of the program last night. Bob, the fear and paranoia is so palpable that I really think we've lost. And we may have. I don't know. GK in Minnesota directs my attention to a wannabe George Zimmerman taking the law into her own hands up in Michigan. Yeah, I saw this story a couple of days ago. Shoplifters fleeing Home Depot, and she pulls out a gun and starts shooting at the fleeing shoplifters. Of course, you cannot use deadly force in defense of property. Police said the suspects, the shoplifting suspects escaped, and the woman, who's 48 years old and had a concealed carry permit, pulled out her Freedom Protector, a 9mm, and started blazing away at the escaping car. This all took place in Auburn Hills, Michigan, just a little ways north of Detroit. She was trying to be a good woman with a gun. Steve adds, when I was a kid, my dad had this beautiful old pump shotgun. He polished the barrel and the stock to make it really beautiful. But you know what? I never had any urge to kill anyone, shoot anyone, or harm anyone with it. What is different about how my parents and family raised me and people who seem absolutely obsessed with guns? I'm very serious because I genuinely don't understand. And I kind of don't understand either, except I kind of do. The difference is in the deliberately enforced paranoia. And I think if you drill down far enough into that paranoia, you will find, of course, because most everything in this country does come back to it, racism. Ferg and I were talking about this earlier today. From the first moment that white people brought slavery as a concept and slaves as real live human beings onto this continent, they knew all the way down to their bones they were doing wrong. And they were scared from that moment to the present that they would eventually be called to account for it. Is that, I mean, when these two pasty-faced, doughy white men behind microphones somewhere talk about disarming America, I mean, look, Barack Obama wasn't running for president in 2000 when Charlton Heston came to the Beckley Raleigh County National Guard Armory and told a building full of knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking morons that Al Gore's gonna get your guns. And the implication being that something happens after we don't all have guns. That we're just one gunned up culture that tolerates mass killings away from being enslaved by the government. Or maybe that somehow or another will be overrun by people who finally want to get even for all the evil that was done to them or to their ancestors, their forebears over the centuries. Is it guilt that drives the paranoia? And I understand what Steve's talking about in his note. There really is a... Appalachian culture, okay? I was not raised in a gun family. But lots of people were, and lots of people are around here. And they like to hunt. Right now, it's squirrel season. Squirrel brains and gravy. Yum, yum. On fresh, hot biscuits. You betcha. But, I mean, that culture's been there for, and you know, one of the people who wrote about it ever so eloquently, of course, was Joe Bagent in Deer Hunting with Jesus. In this particular area, it's not at all surprising that somebody's got a shotgun for some forms of hunting and a rifle gun for other forms of hunting. Maybe they're into the old school stuff, and they've actually got a single shot muzzle loader for muzzle loader season, because we have a specific deer season in which you can only use muzzle loading black powder rifles. I don't know. But I do know, as Steve intimates, that the paranoia is eating us alive. So we know that the paranoids like Mark Walters and gun goober Larry Pratt are afraid that we're going to be disarmed, and they just sort of take that as read. But let's pick this clip back up.
I think you're right, and certainly he doesn't react the way a lot of people were reacting. I think that they were definitely remorseful. They were saddened. They were horrified at what had happened. And as you say, I think he was ticked that here's a crisis that's going to go to waste.
Right, exactly. This is something, it's absolutely correct.
Listen to that evil old bastard laughing about a crisis. How can, in any context, touching upon that slaughter in Oregon, how is there anything about which you chuckle?
This is another one that I'm trying to exploit that's going to fail, and he's making that impassioned plea. Look, to you and I, we know what it means when he says Australia and England. Now, he also made the statement, he says, these are countries just like us. And I'm sitting there pulling my hair out. I'm yelling at the TV, getting yelled at in return, saying,
I can imagine, can't you? He sounds like a yell at the TV kind of guy.
Either record it, don't watch it, you're either going to have a heart attack, and I don't want you to break my TV. But when I hear him say these things, and he says, then he caps it off with, they're just like us. No, they're not just like us.
Right.
He wants us to be just like them.
Right.
He wants us to be just like them, as if being Australian or a subject of the UK is somehow disgusting. As if somehow, really? I mean, do you get up in Australia or the UK every morning and say, oh, gee, if only I lived in Merca, where maybe I could be slaughtered by some paranoid white guy with a gun today, or somebody that I care about or love, or no, no.
Well, we're not the docile subjects of a crown that those folks unhappily are.
Unhappily, docile subjects of a crown. Do you see how these miserable right-wingers talk about the rest of the world? They really do think we're exceptional here. Arthur pointing out from the chat room, Australia is terrible. Yes, Bob, don't forget Europe. Not Europe! It's the final count. Down. Ugh, yuck. So, I'm just trying to paint the mental picture. I'm trying to see the mental picture that these fools are trying to paint of miserable, grim-faced Englishmen and women and Scots and Welsh people and people in Australia and, well, hell, Canada! Docile subjects of the crown. They don't even know about the Commonwealth, do they? These clowns. They don't know that, for instance, there's a constitution in the UK. It just happens not to be written down. Just there it is, another day being a docile subject of the crown. Because, you know, Larry Pratt is so much better of a human being, right?
Not quite so much the Australians, but they're still part of the British Commonwealth.
Oh, I was wrong. Yeah, I forgot about that part.
And definitely the people of England, they don't call themselves citizens. They're subjects. And that makes a big difference in how we look at government.
And it does it now. Well, it should. I mean, the operating philosophy behind the formation of this type of government was that we, the people, would be the government. Whereas how we look at the government, if you're looking through Larry Pratt and Mark Walters' eyes, is that the government is some other, some them, some they, to be feared, instead of a manifestation of our national political will.
Makes a big difference about how Barack Obama looks at us when that's what he wants to emulate. That would make him the king. And
oh, dear God. You know, this kind of crap's been going on for more than 2,000 years. Gaius Julius Caesar was assassinated in part because everybody kept hollering that he wants to be the king in whatever the hillbilly accent is for ancient Rome, when he didn't. Why would he want to be king when he had all the powers of a king? without having to be one. Well, apparently that whole docile subjects thing isn't playing too well with Ron, who's back in the frozen 50-degree north. He tells me 50 degrees and light rain is what he's returned to there in Ottawa. Docile subjects to a crown? I can tell that some bitch never made a disparaging comment about Australian Navy in a Hong Kong bar. 23 courses of waltzing Matilda standing on a rickety table, and I didn't get my ass kicked. Many docile countries even have the balls to brew real beer. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, oh yeah, we're definitely more docile and pathetic than y'all down there. Well, because you don't got no freedom. Where's your tattoo? Yeah.
That's a fascinating topic.
That's right. He could have had so much more power if he'd been born in some other country. What was he out of luck to be born an American?
Yeah, you get that. That's a little hot. That's a little inside joke there among the gun goobers, because everybody knows he's born in Kenya. What luck to be born in Merca. Yeah. Subject line coming from Steve, Larry Fart. He knows exactly what you're saying. He knows his audience doesn't know this stuff. That's the difference. He knows his audience is too ignorant to really know. By the way, the British do call themselves citizens, Steve says. Yeah, but like if the Queen comes walking up, they've got to like bend a knee and kiss her hairy toe or something like that. I mean, it's disgusting. Tim from L.A., subject line, disarming Americans. Ouch. Disarming Americans? How will I drive or eat or go to the potty? I'm a U.S. citizen. I no longer have a firearm. And with gun goobers of America saying that Obama will disarm Americans, which includes me as a U.S. citizen, how then will I survive after I'm disarmed? Oh, and I know several non-U.S. citizens. Will they exclude them or will they disarm them too? These morons are truly morons, and their English proves it, too. I guess immigrants with green cards will be excluded from the gun grab. Reminds me of back when the Shrub said that 3,000 Americans were killed during 9/11. When was a person from Japan, Britain, Afghanistan, or Canada Americans? Well, maybe Canada. Their dog whistle activism makes people even more stupid, like the mother up in Oregon whose son killed himself. Obama will take away their guns! God, the U.S. is spiraling deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole of stupidity. Oh, we're not just spiraling. We're being helped along. That's the thing. This is the product, going back to Steve's question, this is the product of a generation-long deliberate attempt to make America more stupid and more paranoid. And by the way, I used the word slaves earlier, talking about white paranoia, and both Carol and Steve corrected me. Don't you mean workers? Yeah, I reckon I do. Jack in Shreveport says, apparently being a lawful gun owner doesn't actually include knowing the laws about guns. And as far as what would happen after the big gun confiscation, maybe we'd have a lot fewer gun deaths, but that would have to occur after the gun goobers that weren't too busy wetting their pants shot at the troops they say they support so much, because it would be the cops they put on a pedestal and troops they support that would be coming for their guns. Of course, if recent events are any indicator, the gun goobers could threaten law enforcement and aim weapons directly at them. That is, if they were right-wingers, because it's okay if you're a Republican. But see, I mean, Australia had its gun buyback, and nobody came for anybody's guns. There was just a national decision that they didn't want Port Arthur to happen again. That once was enough. And we haven't reached that state here in Merca. We haven't decided that once is enough, or that 46 campus shootings up to this date, October the 9th, 2015, 46 campus shootings are enough. You know, in 1 year. So here I am talking about this godforsaken subject again when I've said all time after time after time there's nothing more to say. I mean, take for instance, and this is just raw audio. There was something that went down yesterday in Gastonia, North Carolina. There was a woman who apparently was suffering from some sort of rather of profound mental illness episode. There's nothing to laugh about here. I wouldn't make sport of it. And her mental illness, as is so often the case, had a religious component to it. It was a little before 4:30 p.m. in Gastonia when the woman began driving in circles at an intersection, a very busy four-way intersection of four-lane roads. A cop finally managed to stop her and asked her what her name was, and she said her name was Faith, Hope, and Love. She went on, she about crushed the cop because she backed into, he had to leap away as she backed in and rammed his car, then hit a couple more and started driving in circles around through the intersection again. When she finally wrecked the car, people who got to her said she was singing, "Jesus loves the little children, all the children of the world." And she looked up at the people who had gathered around her and said, "Pray for me. Look up. Pray for me." And then the cops had to wrestle her again and wound up, I think, pepper spraying her and then carting her off to a hospital for a psychological evaluation. It's pathetic. Mercifully, nobody was injured, except the woman. And this is one, I don't know, maybe Mike Huckabee will say that her religious freedom was violated, I don't know. But the part that interested me, and granted, there's just some gnat sound here, but bear with me because you're going to hear the responses of the people who were watching this all unfold. Here we go.
Crazy. Woman, oh, crazy.
Shit. Yeah, she's done that. Joyce, dude. Get me
back. Move away. She's liable to hit you.
BFL 4619.
Oh, yeah. Hit the police now. Look. Your ass going to jail. Oh, yeah. She run from the police. I hear you, girl. You gonna get your ass shot. You better watch out.
Oh!
Somebody needs to stop her.
4619, CHL 4619.
Hey, yeah, woman. Oh, God, she gonna hit the police. Oh, my God, no, she didn't. She just hit the police.
Right.
She just hit the police. Woo!
Fuck out the way. Fuck out the way, Tate. Move back.
Hey.
Move back, y'all.
Oh my God!
Oh!
Shoot her ass! Oh. Get the fuck out of the way! He's gonna bust her ass!
Oh.
Dude, I thought he was gonna shoot her!
Oh.
Shoot her ass! For somebody gets killed! Shoot her ass! Shoot that woman! Shoot her! Hell yeah! How you go, woman? How you like that? How you go? Act stupid. Get away from her. Crazy, man. It's your own. Damn, crazy.
She is, he or she, or whatever,
is crazy. There you go, son. Manhandle that bitch. This woman just hit two police cars. Might hit a policeman. Right here, Ozark New Hope, folks. Live action. Welcome to Gastonia.
Get y'all out.
Right, ran me over.
Yeah, I was standing right there when she came across there. She about hit us. Me and this other guy was standing right there. She hit that police.
I see her spinning around hitting the cop car twice. What started?
I don't know. She was out in the park, out in this intersection, just doing circles.
Okay.
Waiting for somebody to hit her. Like she's on a suicide mission.
That's about enough. Like she was on a suicide mission. Because, you know, people on suicide missions just drive circles in busy intersections, waiting to... But you heard it. That's your fellow American there. That's your fellow citizen. Shoot her! Shoot her ass! Kill her! Eventually, she went over an embankment. She took out a fire hydrant and rolled her car. And they, the police officer and another individual pulled her out and got her handcuffed behind her back. But that wasn't what the bystanders were looking for. They wanted a killing. I guess this is probably the appropriate time for me to mention that this woman is white. Because had she been black, they would have shot her ass. They very likely would have done what this guy was suggesting. Kill her! Yeah, see, Ron in Canada got there before I did. She should thank her lucky stars she isn't black or wearing a burqa. Nope. She deeply, deeply, deeply moved by the doctrine and dogma of Christianity. I mean, this is pathetic. Now, it's North Carolina, so what are the odds this woman has anything resembling health insurance? I know. Not good. But, I guess there's really nothing new in this. This is from the same folks who, for a long time, we've all heard the stories. You know, the potential suicide is standing there on the bridge, and people line up hollering, "Jump!" Does that happen in other developed countries? Where if you've got somebody on a ledge or a bridge or something, the crowd gathers and says, "I say that, jump, old gal!" Standing on the Pont Neuf and the crowd hollers, "Leapez-vous!" I don't think it's leapez. Maybe it's jeté. There are people in this country who think that we would be a better place if we just engaged in a little bit more summary execution. Emilio, with a note, subject line, "After the guns are gone." After the guns are gone, America will become Nazi Germany. The irony is that they are the ones that most resemble the Nazis. The Oath Keepers and Tea Partiers are potentially the brown shirts. Not yet. The other element is the economic situation where people are feeling the squeeze. The right-wingers have used their propaganda machine in the last 60 years to demonize liberals, blacks, gays, etc. as the culprits. I think you're right that there's always been a racist undercurrent of paranoia that black people will turn the table. This underlies everything, but people are not explicitly aware of it, and they don't have to be. It's baked in at this point. Note from Robert in Australia, just like an Aussie. "It's awful here in Australia. No fear of being shot, universal single-payer health care, nice weather, good beaches. Subjects of the Crown, part of the British Commonwealth." That's funny. I'm an Australian citizen. I'm not a British subject. People born in the UK are technically subjects. And the British Commonwealth has been known as the Commonwealth of Nations since 1949. And Australia has been an independent country since Federation in 1901. We don't cower to anyone. Oh, no. It's kind of like what Ron said, and bless his heart, my father would talk about the willingness of the Aussies to take a swing at a Yank, you know, back during that dust-up of some 70 years ago. My father loved telling the story of the American who... And you know, you've got folks who are fascinated with royalty. My dad told the story about the guy who was talking to the queen this, the queen that, and some guy finally, an American finally, "Oh, fuck the queen." To which came the response, "Oh, sorry, mate. You can't fuck her. You can't even approach her." Yeah. I think we've disturbed Robert a little bit. Subject line: shoot her? Shoot her? Seriously? Is that the answer to all problems in the United States? As for jumpers, I don't recall any such incidents here in Australia, maybe because you can't get out on the ledge of most high-rise buildings, but no crowds shouting jump. I didn't figure there were. And Marty tells me the verb for jump in en français is saucer. Yeah. Irish Dave says, I have the answer. Sanction Australia until they let the people go. Of course, shock and awe would be on the table, and boots on the ground, too, also. Ouch, I forgot the third one there for a minute. No fly zone! No, what's interesting, there actually is a group in Australia who are suggesting an economic boycott of the United States by Australia until such time as we get our wits about us and do something about firearms. It was couched in moral terms. And as Carol notes, death is a spectator sport in the good old U.S. of A. And, of course, just in case you were wondering, we've had stories on two consecutive nights now of ignorant mommies outraged about their children learning about Muslim culture. My good friend Dave Nywert has a post over at Crooks and Liars. He writes, the perfect storm of Islamophobia cresting around the nation could reach a new watermark of ugliness this weekend as armed protesters are planning to gather outside at least 20 mosques in various locations around the United States. Calling the protest part of a global rally for humanity, the self-described patriots plan to bring weapons to protest outside Muslim worship centers on Saturday. According to the Center for New Community, the protests are the brainchild of Phoenix anti-Muslim activist John Ritzheimer, who made headlines in May by organizing an armed protest outside a Phoenix area mosque. Ritzheimer later told the Phoenix New Times that he intended to take his protest idea global. Ritzheimer also has a history of issuing ugly threats, including his threat to arrest Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow for having voted in favor of President Obama's arms deal with Iran. Yeah. So he has announced the following. I'm going to tell everybody to utilize your Second Amendment rights in case we come under the much-anticipated attack. Although Ritzheimer never explained who he expected to attack them. So after he did that, though, he issued another video saying, I'm not responsible for these protests. I'm not the mastermind. No, I cannot take credit for such a wonderful rally. Yeah. At the end of that video, he holds up a copy of the Quran and shoots it with one of his freedom protectors. You know, And I realize this is a delicate question, and I do not mean any insult by it. It would be helpful, I think, if we could get some survivors of the Holocaust to offer their perspective on things like this. Because, to me, at my distance, but looking through the lens of history, I see more than a little bit of similarity. Do you? Is this hate-filled Islamophobia, does it have, and this being Friday, and this is probably the wrong time for me to ask for a commentary from observant Jews, I mean, you know, Shabbat. But does this look like, sound like the run-up to something really, really awful? I mean, we've got right-wing presidential candidates who are making the centerpiece of their various campaigns the idea that we're going to turn the United States into a great walled-off open-air prison camp. Because, see, that's the problem with the walls. It's not just going to keep people out. It's going to keep people in. This Ritzheimer creep says, just know that we 3%, we militia men, are standing at the ready across our nation. And when you strike, we will strike back. We will level and demolish every mosque across the country. He has this fantasy that the protests will extend to Australia and the UK as well. They planned a rally in Medford, Oregon. Those folks said, our local law enforcement officers in our country are under threat like never before. Rally up with other patriots in support of local law enforcement who put their lives on the line every day to protect us. Port Orchard, Washington, offered up the following. We need to send a clear message to them that we won't accept Sharia law here in this country. Now, I guess the upside of this is that at least one of these rallies, these armed assaults on places of worship, has already been canceled, the one in Racine, Wisconsin. That happened largely because people responded to their Facebook page with absolute disgust at what they plan to do. Our buddy the Angry Indian says, hey, Brother Bob. Hey, Angry. Our 100% pure American neighbors who love their Jesus and their guns hope for the U.S. to look like the opening scenes from The Wild Bunch, where the bounty hunters and any and every goober with a firearm decided to shoot it out on a crowded street during a robbery while a temperance march was going on. Women, children, and the elderly were caught in the crossfire and no one stopped shooting. Yeah. And you know, for the time being, I guess, these militiamen, these freedom protectors, I guess they're just blowhard nuisances. But what are they if they can get somebody into the White House and they've already got a Congress? What are they if they get some power behind them? See, I'm not one of these people who thinks that somehow or another this is something that just it can't happen here. I recognize the dark undercurrent that runs through our country. A country that was willing to round up people of Japanese ancestry just because they were of Japanese ancestry, even though they were loyal Americans, and put them in concentration camps during the Second World War. Or the fact that this is a country that engaged in outright wholesale genocide against an entire group of people. Last week, as I passed from northeast Georgia, northwest Georgia into northeast Alabama, I occasionally saw signs that said original Trail of Tears route. And I'm not the kind of person that can see a sign like that and not, even though I'm driving on, not take a moment to reflect and remember what those three words, Trail of Tears, mean. The Muslim community in the United States tries to maintain a degree of equanimity about all of this hatred. They do a pretty good job. The article by Dave Nyward over at Crooks and Liars pointed out, someone from the Council on American Islamic Relations said, you never know how serious these people are. I think it's foolhardy not to assume that they are as serious as they talk. Because there is historical precedent for looking at someone who is talking this kind of stuff about a different group, a different threatened minority. And, he's full of hot air. Take, for instance, this monstrosity. Pamela Geller. Oh, and yeah, Carol points out, police put their lives on the line to protect us. Really? Last year, more kids under the age of 12 were killed with guns at school than cops were in the line of duty. Makes me want to walk up to every second grader and thank them for their service. That or just wrap your arms around them and never let go. I got a grandkid who's a second grader, and a grandkid who's a kindergartner, and a grandkid who's a third grader. They're showing real potential, too. Their mom and dad are really busting their humps to make good kids out of them. But they're going to school now in a world where they have active shooter drills. They go to a school where at a time when no one was in the school, not too awfully long back, somebody came by and put a few bullets into the school. I suspect more than a few of the Horn Family Commune congregation grew up doing duck and cover drills for the anticipated day when the Reds decided to push the button down. Those had largely disappeared by the time I got into public school, but we still had tornado drills. And those things were terrifying. They kind of have to be. But where the Soviets could conceivably have launched a nuclear strike that would have affected most of the United States and triggered World War III. Wherever the ICBM landed, well, it's all over in a flash. And getting under your desk won't do anything to change that. And tornadoes are pretty much a geographic thing. There's a tornado alley, Oklahoma, Missouri, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, occasionally up into Kentucky, over into the Carolinas. I don't think they have tornado drills in California, although they may have earthquake drills. But But I think it's entirely a different thing when every school child in the United States at a very tender age has to learn what to do when somebody decides to defend freedom at them. I think that's a whole different situation altogether. But meanwhile, yeah, Pamela Geller.
Monica Crowley was apparently in Austria for some occasion, and she filmed the stations in Austria where, I guess, the immigrants passed through there on their way to Germany. And, you know, she was very meticulous about shooting lots of different scenes. There were barely any children, barely any women. They were all men between the ages of 18 and 35. That would seem to me to be an awful demographic for us to be importing into Western Europe and then finally into America.
It's an army.
Yeah, it's an
the
army.
The majority are young, fit, and male. 4 out of 5 are not from Syria. Why not go to a country where they speak the language and they have the same culture? Why wouldn't they go to Muslim countries? You know, the Muslims are always, screaming about Palestinians and, you know, we got to take care of them. Why aren't you taking care of these, of your brothers and your sisters? I mean, why is this being dumped on Europe? Because ISIS warned. Not once, not twice, but a number of times. I know I reported on it ever since last summer that they intended to send an army of ISIS operatives in a migration to Europe. And then you have that jihadi in the White House saying he's going to take to offer assistance, hundreds of thousands in.
Well, you got
Europe
that?
Offer assistance to us and take in Mexicans and Central Americans? He is the most dangerous man in the world because he has the most power and he is the leader of the free world and he is aiding and abetting the global jihad movement at every turn.
You got that? The jihadi to whom she refers is, of course, President Obama. And she refers to him as the most dangerous man in the world. They got blood on their minds. They have a yearning for war. And I know when we talk about politics, we talk about the necessity for a Democratic president because, you know, the Supreme Court. And I've said, yeah, because the census. Here's another reason for a Democratic president in the White House. Because World War III. Pam Geller is not an outlier to the Republican Party. She is a mainstream Republican. She believes all the things that you need to believe to be a conservative. And you cannot convince me that when she gets on the air and says the things that she says, she isn't hoping that somebody, somehow, will do something about the jihadi. No, sorry. Fourteen minutes past the hour, and I want to thank Carol Baker, Giver, for getting us started on our fundraising this evening. Thanks to Carol, we are down to $180.89 in fundraising this evening. And I also had a note from Dr. John up New York way saying that there's $50 on the table that he will match the next 50 that come in. So that would take us down to $80.89. So there's a $50 challenge on the table. Thank you very kindly to Carol. And hopefully we'll raise, you know, we'll raise what we need to raise this evening. By the way, the disease is spreading, but not with the strength these monsters are hoping for. Robert sent along a couple of photographs. He said an anti-Muslim protest at Parramatta yesterday fell flat. Hundreds of anti-Muslim right-wing protesters were expected, but less than two dozen showed up. Muslim terrorists not welcome here, neither are their leftist supporters. And other such similarities, similar signs. Police in Parramatta were expecting about 400 protesters, so they brought out the horse-mounted police and the folks in the bulletproof vests and so forth. They didn't, like I said, like Robert said, they didn't get two dozen. That's hopeful. And in fact, Robert said, hopefully this is a good sign of what's really happening. A small number of fanatics on both sides causing trouble for everyone else. Hopeful indeed. Steve writes in from New York and says, now tell me there's any question we've lost. I'm not going to say that. But I will say that the stakes are pretty clearly established. Of Pam Geller, Steve says, now that's bloodlust. Wow. Yeah, and we only got through half of her clip. And of course, she just lies. The majority of the refugees, the majority of the migrants, whatever one prefers to call them, are not young, fit, and male. There's plenty of children. In some instances, the father or the head of the household does go on in hopes of establishing residency so he can then safely bring the family onward. Geller asks, why not go to a country where they speak the language and have the same culture? Because we have this habit of bombing countries where they speak the language and have the same culture. But, of course, Pamela Geller's also drop-dead, dumbass ignorant, because simply because one speaks Arabic does not mean one has the same culture. The cuisines are different from Iraq to Iran. Religious traditions are different from Beirut to Saudi Arabia. But see, this is the front end of how you get people to a mindset that is okay with extermination. Isn't it? And this stuff is all over. We haven't spent any time with the proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher, of the American Family Association hate group lately. This goes back a few days, but it's worth the moment. Fisher is concerned about immigration as well. And he's adopting the moderate hardcore right-wing position. I know, it sounds like a contradiction in terms.
Now, what this would mean in America's case, if we were to do this, and again, I'm just speaking hypothetically, if we were to take this seriously, if we were to do something about this, here's what it might look like. We would communicate to the world that strangers are welcome here in the United States under one condition, that they be willing to assimilate completely into American culture, that they be willing to adopt our God, that they be willing to adopt our Judeo-Christian heritage. Notice it's a Judeo Christian heritage.
Yeah, I did notice that, Brian. Please. I'm putting out a call to the Jewish community. Would you just politely ask the evangelical Gundamentalist to stop bogarting your traditions? If they want to claim America has some sort of Christian culture, even though, you know, it's supposedly a secular state, that they're free to do it, but don't drag Jewish people into it. Yeah, by the way, going back to Pam Geller, Arthur says, what did she call the president? The jihadi-in-chief? Makes me think of people who say they're not racist, and half a paragraph later, they say that the president's not even black. He's a half-breed. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, you're welcome to immigrate to the United States if you will, upon arriving here, convert to Christianity. I presume people would have to convert to Brian Fisher's own particular hate-filled, bizarre, venomous version of Christianity. Note from Tim from L.A. Ban Sharia law, then ban the Bible, too. It's amazing how these fundamentalist Christians scream no Sharia law, but the Bible and Sharia law are a lot closer than these morons think. Fascinating post here. Guess what, Christian, right? You're not so different from Muslims after all. Both of them suggest women must be submissive to their husbands. Both of them justify marital rape. Both of them call premarital sex a sin. Both of them believe that a woman's primary duty is to bear children. Both of them condemn abortion. Both of them say they were reformatory religions to protect women's rights. Both of them think natural disasters are a result of not believing in God. Wow. So if they ban Sharia law, that would mean the banning of Christianity, too. Oh, no, it wouldn't. There you go, being all optimistic, Tim. As I said, with people so stupid, they're biting their own tails off like Ouroboros. Nice reference. Boy, right-wingers are stupid. Also, did Pam Geller just say the Mexicans in Central America on the audio you played? Yes, she did. When are Mexicans Central Americans? Well, they're not. Oh, and will Geller freak out when she realizes that Central America and Mexico are on the North American continent? Yeah. I think I'm ruining Steve's Friday. Subject line, Brian Buckert. Where did it say that in Emma Lazarus's poem about becoming a Christian and all that? Well, it didn't. That's the thing. But Brian Fisher isn't done.
We and the Jewish people share the same heritage, the same moral standards.
We do. Same heritage and same moral standards. How long since you had a fried shrimp there, Brian? That dress shirt you're wearing, I'll bet that's a polycotton blend, buddy. And then there's that tattoo of Jesus' face on his ass. Well, no, I'm just imagining that. But these evangelical fundamentalist racist bigots, Islamophobes, homophobic freaks, they've got to try to reach out to make common cause. And they think that just because someone's Jewish that they necessarily hate all people who are Muslim. When I can testify to the fact that that is not true. In a number of instances. But Brian Fisher's got it all laid out. Everything that people have to do if they want to come to Merca.
Because they're part of the Judeo-Christian tradition, and they honor it and revere it. They would be welcome here. Adopt our Christian holidays. Not come into this country and expect to have special holidays, Muslim holidays, you know.
Yeah, because they're not holidays here, those Muslim holidays. I mean, Eid and all of that. No, not really a holiday. That's a special holiday. They can't have it.
There's one school board, we played the soundbite from that, where they're all torn up. I mean, you talk about division. And see, this is the problem. What you get is cultural division when you have two strongly held religious traditions that are completely incompatible with one another. They clash. What does that create? It creates a lack of unity. It creates conflict. It creates tension. And so the school board was being asked to officially place Muslim holidays on the school calendar. And the school board said, look, we can't do it. We can't afford another day of these students not being in class. If they have religious convictions, they can use a personal leave day. We've got a generous policy there. So it's
really what? Time out. Jack, time out. Now, we've got a generous policy about leave days. Where? I want to know about it. Where's that? I mean, we've got the Family Medical Leave Act, but that's not even paid time away. That's you're on your own buddy time. And that doesn't even apply to all businesses. Where is this generous policy of which he speaks? I think it exists only in the thin gray settlings that pass for brains that slosh around between Brian Fisher's ears, largely covered by his helmet-like hair.
The same policy that the Jewish students use for Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. Muslim students can use the same privilege. They can excuse themselves from school on that holiday, but we are not going to put it on the calendar. And it's tremendous fracas ensued from that because of the tension. So we're going to expect people, and this is what we communicate to the world, if you come to America, you understand that we are a Christian country, and therefore we observe Christian holidays. Don't expect us to make room for your holidays.
So I guess the 4th of July is a Christian holiday. Thanksgiving is a Christian holiday. Memorial Day is a Christian holiday. Labor Day, Christian holiday. Because, I mean, we can't be Labor Day. Oh, my God. We can't be honoring the labor of non-Christians. Because they're all shiftless and lazy anyway, right? This guy lives in a parallel America. I think there's the bearded goateed Spock there too or something. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. This guy thinks it's not that he wants a theocracy. He wants us to already be a de facto theocracy. You know, these people have... I always enjoyed Christmas. But these people have taken the joy right out of it. It's a grim and hateful sort of thing. Thanks to them. Celebrating the birth of some blood-sodden war god. Yeah, I know. I thought about that, too. Halloween's a Christian holiday, asks Steve. Well, oh, go on, Brian. Wrap up.
Expecting you to accommodate yourself to our standards, our traditions, and our holidays. We will expect you to adopt our Christian moral values. No place, no room for Sharia law.
But Roman Catholic Church law is okay, and Jewish temple law, or I don't know what, the law, you know, that's okay too. You know, the stuff that concerns divorces and, yeah, that's okay. No Sharia, though. Hey, when's the last, I mean, you're in Mississippi, right? Right, Brian Fisher? I mean, when's the last time you had some pulled pork? Mighty good down there. All that hickory flavor. I bet he can get Kaneka brand sausage right there in his own grocery store. I had to haul four packages up from Alabama just to have a taste of it. Hint, it ain't made of lamb.
In the United States, we will expect you. You'll be welcome here. We'll open our arms to you. We'll open our hearts to you. We'll open our communities to you. But we will expect you to adopt our cultural and Christian moral standards.
How's that going to work? I mean, is there going to be a... Because, you know, every year you see the ceremony, and it's kind of inspiring of people from different countries who are taking the oath of citizenship. To placate Brian Fisher, are we going to have to add on a baptism now? And if we are, what flavor Christianity is it going to be? Because I think if you get right down to it, he's not going to be okay with people wanting to be baptized with a bunch of Arabs, Arabic numerals. He's not getting baptized into the Roman Catholic Church. What if they want to be Mormons? Hey. Seventh-day Adventurers. I mean, is it full immersion or will sprinkling do?
We will expect you to adopt our Christian heroes, and we will expect you to adopt our Christian history.
I didn't know there was a Christian history. I thought there was just history. But I guess that was, what was her name, Christian Kayla Normandin's whole complaint, wasn't it? Her child wasn't learning Christian world history. He was learning world history that had Muslims in it. God almighty! This is... I mean, these people open the door to a nightmare vision of a full on goose stepping fascist America that terrifies me. And while I won't say we've lost like Steve does, I'll say the struggle is ongoing. And unfortunately, a whole lot of people on our side don't understand the gravity of it. And people who are just sort of trying to get through life and sit down and watch a bass fishing show or a football game or some program about, you know, dancing or something, just to relax a little bit and stay as far away from the culture wars as they can, well, they really don't understand how grave this is. This hate group, the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi Stan, has the power to mobilize no small number of people. Granted, they weren't very good at boycotting Jaguar, because there just aren't a whole lot of evangelical fundamentalists who aren't evangelical fundamentalist evangelists who have the money for a Jaguar. But still. This crap is terrifying. Because, see, they have a candidate now. They got Donald Trump out there. And if they prefer their bigotry a little more mumbly, they got Ben Carson. And if it's neither one of them, if you're feeling kind of more mainstreamy, well, you still got Jeb Bush. Because, you know, he said the other day that his brother went too far in expanding voting rights. Mercy. Oh, and by the way, I know we enjoy the schadenfreude of it all, but can we pretty please stop pretending that somehow or another that the disarray we're seeing in the Republican Party is somehow an indicia that they're on the way out the door, because they're not. It gives me no pleasure to say this, but they're still going to be in the majority on the morning after the election in 2016 and in January of 2017. They're still going to have a majority in the House. Where's the progressive Democrat who's going to take down Louie Gohmert or Steve Cantaloupe's King? Or that guy who comes off now as a moderate who actually supported the Irish Republican Army's terrorism campaigns, Peter King in New York? Where? Who's gonna unseat any of the fools in Alabama or Mississippi, or the fools in South Carolina who voted against Hurricane Sandy relief, but now by God expect to have it for South Carolina? Who's gonna unseat that bizarre freak Jason Chaffetz? Who's going to unseat Daniel Webster in Florida? Hell, who's going to unseat Kevin McCarthy in California? Hint, nobody. The best hope we have in this country is to have a Democratic president who can maintain some form of status quo relative to a drop-dead crazy Republican Party in control in the House and the Senate. And the prospects in the Senate in 2016 are not that much better either. So while we giggle a little bit and we cackle some, understand that the condemned ate heartily. And, no. There's not going to be any big sea change in 2016 because the population dynamics and the voter suppression will be sufficient to make sure that does not happen. Yeah. And it's... It's not like I'm the only one who feels this sense of frustration. Thursday, on the floor of the House of Representatives, Representative and Democrat Alcee Hastings of Florida gave breath to his own sense of anguished frustration regarding firearms in this country. But the firearms thing is tied to the Islamophobia thing, is tied to the anti-gay thing, is tied to the anti-choice thing. These are symptoms of a larger disease. They're not individual pockets or isolated problems. Alcee Hastings. Maybe. Well, that's interesting. Well, let's try again.
I believe in the Second Amendment. I own a gun. When I was a child, at age 7, I had a Roy Ryder BB gun. When I was 12, I had a single shot of my .22 rifle. I believe in every citizen's right to own a gun. And I believe my colleagues here on this side believe the same thing. But every man, woman, and child is accounted for in the estimate of guns that are in this country. That would be more than 330 million. And there are some people in our society who believe that somebody is going to come and take their guns. I wonder who that person would be. Would it be a president of the United States? Would it be the military? Are they going to go and take the guns from their moms, their brothers, their sons, their fathers? That's foolish. And we need to stop this madness. Doing nothing In the face of all of this epidemic violence that we are experiencing, allows that not only is this house dysfunctional in many of its particulars, but it is frozen in its indifference to the gun violence in this country.
Any objections? It is indifferent to gun violence in this country. Because, see, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. You can't claim to love this country and remain indifferent to the massive bigotry-driven problems that beset it. And, I mean, it goes on and on and on. Kind of like this filibuster. 19 minutes before the hour. And I want to thank Thomas Jug of Punch for meeting Dr. John's challenge. Thank you, Thomas. And VJ, thank you, VJ, for jumping in as well. That would Thomas took out Dr. John's challenge and the odd cents that were left over. VJ then took us down to $64.11 to go. $64.11 in fundraising for this evening. Thank you, VJ. Thank you very kindly. Carol got it all started. Thanks, Carol. But in the wake of the shooting in Roseburg, the right wing has gone out of its way to try to avoid reality or dealing with the fact that the opposite of love is indifference and that they are indifferent to the slaughter of their fellow Americans. From the Family Research Council, another hate group, their president, Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins, well, he says he knows who's at fault for the shooting at Umpqua Community College. Hint, it wasn't the guy with the gun.
Could it be that the breakdown of the family is really what's at the heart of the crime that we're seeing in societies? Nobody, the president wasn't talking about two very important aspects of this shooting in Oregon. He wasn't talking about the fact that the shooter came from a broken home. Did not talk about the fact that the shooter was targeting people based upon their religious affiliation, shooting Christians in the head, executing them. Could the religious hostility that the president and his policies have fostered have something to do with this? Could his policies that have pushed us away from family formation and from marriage have something to do with the moral implosion that's taking place in our country?
Could they? Some say. Excuse me. Where does this notion come from that President Obama has personally convinced people to stop getting married? Is there one iota of evidence to show that marriage rates have fallen since January the 21st, 2009? Is there? Is Tony Perkins bemoaning the fact that gay people aren't marrying into entering into fraudulent straight marriages? Is that what he's saying? This is like listening to Jabberwocky in Esperanto. And he is, and there's not a dime's worth of difference between what he's saying here and what Pamela Geller said about the jihadi. He is actually saying President Obama caused a young, mentally challenged white male to go and shoot up a community college. Yeah, Arthur's on board. Arthur gets it. Could it be that leprechauns are responsible for the rise in dental cavities? Could it be? Some say. Not saying, just saying, just saying, not saying.
Could the president's lawlessness, remember he's the president who had an attorney general who was in contempt of Congress, Lois Lerner, who pled the fifth because she didn't want to tell about how they were using the IRS to target conservatives and release confidential information, didn't want to talk about running guns in Mexico that took the lives of U.S. Border Patrol agents.
You know, especially because that program was started under dim leader, but Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates Perkins, has forgotten about that.
I think the president's priorities are misplaced. But he's trying to seize this, in my opinion, trying to use this to advance his anti-Second Amendment political agenda.
What does God need with a starship? There's Star Trek reference number two. What does God need with a Second Amendment? This guy's a preacher, okay? This guy's a religious hustler. Where in the 501c3 tax-exempt organizational status of the Family Research Council does that bunch have anything to say about the Second Amendment? Well, Peter owned a sword, and Jesus told him to put it up! For those that live by the sword shall die by the sword! I take no joy in mentioning this, but it's worth it. I guess, understanding that I'm not trying to be insensitive. It would be interesting, though, to try to sort out the number of adult victims of random shootings in this country who are diehard, no pun intended, advocates for the Second Amendment. Because depending on how the numbers came out, you might find out that maybe Jesus was right. That those who live by the sword, or the AK-47, or the AR-15, or the 19-round Glock, shall die by the sword, or etc. Steve, who wants to finish up Friday on the Front Porch fundraising with a $25 challenge. Thank you, Steve. Steve will match the next $25 that come in. Steve says, well, hell's bells. There was no divorce before President Obama, nor is there any divorce anywhere else in the world. Oh, man. Exactly. And so again, and it's probably boring by now, I urge you to think not so much about Tony Perkins, but about the people who sit there nodding their little pointy heads, going, Yes, praise Jesus. You're right, Brother Perkins. Mm-hmm. What, Sparky, in the chat room? Great big letters, all caps. No Bob? I'm not sure we're sending here. Wait. There is no Bob but Bob. Okay, I got it. So there's an answer. Irish Dave with a note says, but Bob, does young master Bates? I saw what you did there. Answer, factor in chemtrails and shit also, too. The marriage rate has remained constant at 2 or 1 plus 1. Does not apply in Greater Deseret and Round County, Kentucky. Yeah. Irish Dave also adding, Tail Gunner Jose is the answer. But Tony Perkins wasn't done. Referring to what President Obama said about us becoming dangerously numb to these day-after-day-after-day NRA death lotteries. Well, he had his own spin. Granted, it's disgusting.
I think that President Obama, he doesn't grieve over the...
This is a caller. Check the duct tape. Make sure the hockey puck's in there real good.
I think that President Obama, he doesn't grieve over the murder of 60 million babies who cannot protect themselves. I have a hard time thinking that he's going to grieve over the rest of us, United States citizens, when we can't protect ourselves.
That's a very good point, Laura. You know,
is it? Because it sounds like unmitigated horse shit to me. See, there's Barack Hussein Obama, the human being, and then there's Barack Hussein Obama, the demon who lives in their minds. He just sort of burrows around their brains through all the little Swiss cheese holes caused by the spirochetes. And if we only had a godly man in the White House who would sit there and grieve every day for the 60 million defenseless little tiny gatherings of cells, well, then maybe we wouldn't be so... Well, he'd maybe grieve, too, about defenseless people. Well, I mean, yeah, the people who are killed in these damn shootings are defenseless. But it's not the fact that they're defenseless that's the problem. It is the fact that they need... that there's even a need for it. I'm sure you see the distinction.
In taking that beyond the president, Laura, you actually hit on something I think is extremely important.
Oh, my.
Hadn't even factored into this discussion. But as a nation, can we truly grieve? Have we lost the ability to grieve? And I know the president and others have said, you know, these shootings have become commonplace. But why have they become commonplace?
Yeah, okay. I'm up for that. We've been trying to sort that out for a while, Tony.
I think it's because we've lost the understanding of the value of human life.
Wait. You know what's coming, don't you? We have mass shootings by paranoid, pasty-faced white people, males mostly, because abortion. You know, the Roseburg shooter went to a school for special needs kids in California before his mama moved him to Oregon, where there was no such support available. And just like Adam Lanza, remember Adam Lanza, Mother Lanza with her horde of guns. You know, Newtown, Sandy Hook Elementary, that Adam Lanza. His mama, Adam Lanza's mama, would soothe his harried mind by taking him to the gun range and making sure that a kid with some distinct problems was well-versed in how to operate a deadly firearm, all firearms being deadly. So, too, the Roseburg shooter's mama took him to the gun range to soothe his fevered brain by squeezing out a few rounds of projectiles that emerged from the muzzle of the firearm anywhere between 850 and 3,000 feet per second. There's a callousness for human life, wouldn't you say? And by the way, the school that the Roseburg shooter attended included developmentally disabled kids who couldn't even go to the restroom by themselves. No clear indication of the degree to which the Roseburg shooter was disabled. But he was abled enough to be able to work a whole bunch of guns, wasn't he? Yeah.
I was having a conversation with a pastor earlier this morning. I was at a hospital, and he was visiting patients. I was visiting my father, actually. And he was talking about how if we understood that people were created in the image of God, and we treated them appropriately with the fact that they're created in the image of God. If we treated them like, for instance, let's say we talk to them the way we talk to God, would the world be a better place? But when we obviously take away the understanding of God and we remove God from the public square and we take away the idea from, or we deny the reality, the facts that we are created in the image of God, and we tell children that they're the result of, an accidental, combination of chemicals in the primordial stew, then we lose that concept of treating others the way they should be treated.
We do? Because I don't accept the King James Version Genesis creation as in any wise related to reality. And yet, somehow or another, I don't mistreat other human beings. I reject Christianity. And yet, somehow, I don't just walk around stepping on people, stomping people's toes, or kicking them in the instep, or pulling children's hair just to hear them cry, and no one does. But according to this psychopath, sociopath at the very least, I think, the fault for all of these shootings somehow lies somewhere between Barack Obama and Charles Darwin. Take a moment and ponder, if you will, the world these theocrats want, the United States that these theocrats want. Imagine a world where you are not free to worship as you wish, or not at all. Imagine a world where you can't get a job unless you swear fealty to Tony Perkins' version of a deity. Imagine having to rely on some religious outfit to declare who you could and could not love. Or being expected to create a child every time you had sex. Good question, Devin. Devin asks, what's the muzzle velocity of primordial ooze? I'm guessing it's not very high, being as how it's ooze. And being as how it's primordial, I'm guessing there's not a lot of that around anymore. But if we are numb to these shootings, and, you know, I mentioned that the other day that I disagree with President Obama on that count. We're not numb. We are resigned. We know that nobody's going to do anything about it. Although there has been, are you aware of this? There's been a glimmer of actual spine being demonstrated by the minority in the Senate. They've said that they're going to hold up everything until they get a vote on a gun bill. Oh, until they get a vote. Okay. They'll get a vote. Mitch McConnell will be happy to give him a vote. Yeah, all in favor of the anti-American gun-grabbing Obama gun bill, y'all just say aye so we can use all that dirty money to beat the ass off of you in the coming election in 2016. All your ayes. Go ahead. Yeah, that's what I thought. Next. Mm-hmm. Well, let's finish up Tony Perkins, shall we?
And if we don't see human beings having intrinsic value because they're created in the image of God.
Why do they have to have intrinsic value? Why is it being created in the image of God is what determines the intrinsic value? Take a moment. Do you realize what a dangerous statement that is on his part? If you don't believe that you were created in the image of God, you have no intrinsic value according to this Christian. And if you have no intrinsic value, what can he, in the name of his God, do to you if he gets hold of the government? And believe me, they're closer than you think.
And we can destroy the lives of 60 million through abortion and aided with our laws and, in some cases, our tax dollars.
Yada, yada, laws and tax dollars. Notice the false surety that this guy offers. There's 60 million. Who says that those 60 million were going to make it all the way to a live birth? What percentage of those 60 million would be lost in miscarriage? Because something around 50% of all human pregnancies do end in some form of miscarriage, which is kind of a bullshit term in the first place. It implies something went wrong that mama didn't know. It's not miscarriage. Mama didn't carry the baby wrong. It's just biology. And right, Marty notes 60 million through abortion. No mention of war, huh? Nope. And yeah, Marty asked a couple of minutes ago, would that include those brown-colored people they're calling to have bombed into oblivion? Are those lives included? No. Because remember, Brian Fisher says you're not welcome if you're not a Christian. Steve said a few minutes ago, to the Horn family, I can't listen to these right-wing fascist hookers and whores anymore. Please accept my apology if I have to sign off. No apology necessary. Bob down in Texas observes under the subject line, godly conservatives. How is it that these godly conservatives deny health care, good paying jobs, and shred the tiny safety net to people who are not aborted? Well, because you don't matter if you're post-born. They're pro-fetus, not pro-life. And that's kind of a glib way of addressing it. But the fact of the matter is, there's nothing Christian about them. They are obsessed, and they are neo-Calvinists. They are worshippers of mammon. They are worshippers of wealth. And, you know, your wealth is a determinant of whether or not, is an indicator of whether or not God likes you. Here, just a few seconds left.
You know, you eventually do lose the ability to grieve. Laura, thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, goodbye, Laura. So if you don't subscribe to Tony Perkins' twisted version of religion, you don't have the ability to grieve, and therefore Roseburg. Yeah, I know, Devin. Neo, what's new about them? Well, it's not the same thing as Calvinism of old. And, of course, Irish Dave asks, well, if some fetuses don't believe in the God, do they have no intrinsic value either, and so what's the problem with aborting them? Ah! Mm-hmm. Wow, 2-hour and 6-minute filibuster. And more. Oh, by the way, speaking of shootings, this isn't good news, but it's a sort of closure, I suppose. You remember last April when police in North Charleston, South Carolina, blew away a 50-year-old man by the name of Walter Scott? North Charleston Mayor R. Keith Summey issued a statement saying the city council had voted to settle all potential claims over Scott's death for $6.5 million. Mayor Summey said, I'm glad the city and the family were able to reach a settlement without the necessity of a lawsuit. On the other hand, Judy Scott, Walter's mother, said, could have been $1 trillion, it would never bring my son back, but I thank them for what they did. Because the city council knew how wrong it was. Officer Michael Slager awaits his trial for murder in Walter Scott's death. Eric Garner's family was paid $5.9 million by the city of New York after police there killed him. Freddie Gray's family is going to be paid $6.4 million for what Baltimore police did to him in killing him. Arthur you've got the perspective. Arthur says, oh, I get it. Liberals see a baby being born and they get grossed out because birth is messy. Right-wingers see a birth and they say, ugh, a post-fetus. Yeah. I'll never forget the time when we had some clown in the legislature in West Virginia who dared to call me. Back when I was doing terrestrial radio, and I asked him simply, are you responsible for all the fetuses? Well, I am. And he said, does your wife know? But you don't give a damn about them after they're born, of course. But there are real threats here in Merca. I mean, they're not posed by guns or anything. No. Alabama's junior senator, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. He knows what's really threatening America. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he does. You probably know. But still, after everything being so serious, sort of a half a chuckle is valuable at this point.
And I really think it needs to be said that the president should never have said smoking marijuana is like smoking cigarettes. Oh, I wish I hadn't done it. That's the kind of message that people hear. And now we have states legalizing it, and they're already talking about recriminalizing it. It's a mistake. We've seen that experiment before. Lives are at stake here. A new head of Drug Enforcement Administration told me recently that 120 people a day are dying of drug overdose in America. How many of them have serious brain injury as a result of those overdoses? How many families? Our presiding officer, Dr. Cassidy, been around emergency rooms. How many people have taken their emergency rooms at what great cost to our community? How many lives are disrupted? How many children and broken homes? How many people had to leave their home because one spouse or the other had spent all the family money on drugs to support a habit? How many children have been abandoned, went to bed without food?
Understand, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is addressing himself to the issue of the legalization of cannabis. They spent all the family money on the marijuanas. And how he wishes President Obama had never, ever said that he wished he hadn't smoked a cigarette or the marijuanas. Because that made people think that smoking the marijuanas was just like smoking the cigarette. When we all know that marijuanas is far worse than a cigarette. Ecce Republicans. Country's infrastructure crumbling. A huge part of a state devastated by massive flooding. People being randomly gunned down. And in the most august deliberative body on the planet, the Senate of the United States of America, why, there's Alabama Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III issuing his call, his clarion call from the mountaintop against the dangers, the addictive qualities, the terrifying horrors of injecting the marijuanas. I wish this was a parody. Really I do.
Because of addiction in that family. These are serious...
Wait. What about the addiction?
How many children have been abandoned, went to bed without food?
Went to bed without food? Really? You might... Oh, Senator Sessions, you might be one to answer that question, seeing how you so eagerly vote to cut food nutrition programs off from, you know, the useless eaters. Aren't you special?
Out of addiction in that family. These are serious matters. We made tremendous progress.
Really? On drugs? We made, sir. I mean, I've been on the planet since 1963. When were we making all that serious progress? I bet he's going to tell us.
The murder rate in America dropped by over 50% in the last since 1980, when Ronald Reagan said, "Just say no," and started a war on crime.
I thought he said. I thought Nancy said just say no, and they started a war on drugs. Well, shut up. He's on a roll.
My.
The marijuanas is causing the murder rate to go up again. Ain't got nothing to do with no guns. By the way, this is a guy who once said that he thought the Klan was okay until he found out they smoked the dope.
Really?
And he pointed me as the United States Attorney in Alabama. I know what we did. And the federal government led the way with tough sentencing, eliminating parole, targeting dangerous drugs in effective ways.
Wonder how much money he's gotten from the private prison corporations of America. Because they're the ones who are worrying about all the nonviolent drug offenders being let out. Well, this will affect our shareholder price. Our share price, sir. Our quarterly profit and loss statement will be devastated. Mm-hmm.
And states and local governments follow. I'm worried about it. It's just tragic to me that we're making the same mistakes we made in the 60s and 70s.
This guy needs a doobie.
According to new data, 4.3 million people abuse or are dependent on marijuana.
Oh, now just hold on a damn minute. I'd love to know where this new data comes from. 4.3 million people abuse or are dependent on marijuana. Dependent? Addicted? Really? Well, there you go. Timmy just injected the marijuanas that one time, and the next thing you know, he chopped his poor Grammy up into ceviche. No, really. So people abuse, 4.3 million people abuse or are dependent on marijuana. I mean, I think some people are dependent on marijuana for things like making them not so miserable while they have cancer. There are people who are dependent on marijuana to keep them from having massive seizures. Eh? People, I suppose, are dependent on marijuana to help keep their chronic pain at bay. But pot junkies? Really?
Marijuana is stronger today, several times stronger than the marijuana of the 1960s, and it does impact people adversely.
Of course, it all depends on how you define adversely. For instance, if Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was to go a-honking on some Bubba Kush, he might stop being such an asshole. His third eye might get squeegeed clean. He might look up and go, oh, dude, I have spent the last 65, 68, 70 years of my life being a total dick. And that, when you're a Republican, is an adverse reaction to the marijuanas. Exactly. Exactly. Progress like CCA, says GK. In Minnesota. Bingo. And Bob in Texas asks, how many deaths come from abuse of prescription drugs? A lot. Marty asks, how many die from alcoholism or cancer from smoking? A lot. Oddly enough, none from the marijuanas. Carol pointing out he got a chart from Jason Chaffetz, so it must be true. I mean, you know what? I don't know if he's up for election in 2016, but there won't be a credible challenger to him in Alabama if there is. Arthur pointing out, little Timmy injected the marriage iguanas and went from being God-fearing white to Japanese and ended up in that there horn chat room. Oh! Hey, let's check in with the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, shall we? Let's do. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. I finally found rounded up some people.
Oh, cool.
We've got a surprise guest.
Yes, I see. It's after a long appearance, a long time away, a surprise appearance by the one and only Waggy. What's happening, Waggy?
Hello, hello. Say hello to one of our most recent immigrants to the United States, Malagasy American Mia.
Hey, hi. Mia. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
And we've got a lot to say about the immigration process whenever that topic comes up again, I'm sure.
I think it just did.
Uh-huh.
Was there a compulsory baptism?
It's a trial by exhaustion.
Is it kind of like applying for Social Security disability where they deny you and hope you just go away?
There's a lot of hoping you just go away, I think, because we managed to complete the whole thing in 10 months. And some other folks that she met there at the embassy and on the airplane and all that said, same situation, married couple and all, 3 years, 4 years. Mm-hmm.
But you did negotiate the whole, you did eventually negotiate the whole tormented Byzantine process, right?
Yes, successfully and legally and with all papers complete and correct.
So is there a next step or are you done?
And after we're married 2 years, there's a final step to go from conditional residency to permanent residency. But basically, your green card will be in the mail within about a month.
Until then, you just kind of stay home.
Oh, no. She's got a passport with a very nice-looking visa in it.
Very good. So are you back in Texas, Stan?
Yes, we're in San Antonio. And, all those people who say, oh, yeah, it's easy to come to the United States. No. But here's the thing. I listen a lot to what's going on in Europe, and you know how long it takes them to grant permanent resident status for someone who doesn't have an immediate relative there?
No.
3 weeks. And that's for non-refugee. That's just for someone who wants to emigrate and then their security checks out okay. And they've got, reasonable skills and all that. And yeah, it's 3 weeks for a green card there.
Wow. But, aren't there some hurdles to jump in terms of, let's say 52-year-old Bob decides that he wants to go and live in Germany. Don't I have to prove some means of support or something?
Well, there are age restrictions for most countries. And those can be pretty onerous. But if you listen to some of the more in-depth reporting with, like, the BBC, the majority of the folks that are coming, they're middle and upper class people with college degrees, master's degrees, some of them working on doctorates, who want to continue engineering. I hear when they say, oh, we're engineers.
I don't think these right-wingers, Waggy, fully comprehend the depth of what of the societal cultural collapse that has taken place in the areas affected by these mass migrations. Because we are talking about doctors, lawyers, dentists, engineers, people at the upper end of the culture. Because the people who the people who have no means just have to stay and die.
Yes, exactly. It's the people whose families can afford to get them out.
And apparently we have an amen from the puppy.
Yes, indeed, a new puppy here.
Oh, brand new dog, huh?
Yeah, he's got six toes on the back of on his back feet. He just kind of, it was a stray for a while, and then he's gotten adopted here.
So he's working on thumbs on the back paws, in other words?
Oh, yeah. If he can figure out how to use those, he's going to be in more trouble.
Well, how long have you been back?
Well, truth be told, I ended up having to come back here in April, but we, for various reasons, wanted to keep that kind of on the lowdown for a while. Mia finally just got here last week.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's the low profile.
I understand. We're awfully glad to have you back. Your input to the conversation was sorely missed.
Well, thank you very much.
Is there much, I mean, there's got to be a lot of cultural readjustment, isn't there?
She's being shy.
Then we'll just take that as read for a yes.
Very good.
Yeah. Also with us in the chat room this evening, the one and only Tim from L.A. Good evening, Tim.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing really well. I'm doing fine. Thank you. I'm just relaxing and just hearing everything. I'm enjoying it. No, especially when I'm typing away and my brain starts hurting. I turn on the horn and I just...
And it hurts worse.
Yeah, I get... Well, I get inspired to do even more because when you're speaking when a caller calls in and starts chatting with you, I get inspired and I use a lot of the quotes you folks use in notes and in my reports and everything. And sometimes I get a headache because I'll read some of the comments from what other people write, and I'm just like, hey, come on, you're a college student getting your master's degree. Can't be that stupid. But I find out they're like in the South or Midwest somewhere, and they don't know anything from... And like I said, you know, life, we're going down the proverbial rabbit hole and a death spiral, you know? But I'm glad your show is here, though. I really am glad.
Well,
and welcome back, Waggy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good to be back and together.
What do they call those again? Lemurs in Madagascar?
Yes, they tried to steal our lunch.
Oh.
Larcenous lemurs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the monkeys, too.
Huh. Are they protected by any chance? Because I want to steal one. Because I saw, you know, I used to watch Zabumafu with my niece. And Zabumafu is so cute.
Yes, short answer, yes. There are also many different kinds of lemurs.
Right. There's ringtail. There's Zabumafu type. Pink lemurs. Oh, they're protected. Shoot.
For the most part. I mean, so is the rainforest wood, but yeah, you can buy it.
So, is there anywhere in San Antonio where you can get, like, stuff to cook, because I remember the call from Madagascar one time, Waggy, when you were talking about the wild profusion of delicious cuisine.
For the most part, it's based onion, garlic, tomato, ginger, turmeric. It's good to get a good turmeric. But there's one thing that we want to try to find. So this is a general call. Bitter eggplant.
Oh.
If anyone knows where to get seeds for bitter eggplant, because there's something that'll grow just fine here. They're a nice, hardy, drought-tolerant eggplant. But they're grown...
I thought all eggplant was kind of bitter.
Well, these are very. These are medicinal bitter. And an acquired taste, but addictive once you acquire the taste.
So when you're preparing them, I mean, I know because of the bitterness with a regular eggplant, a lot of times, you know, you'll soak them in salt water or coat them in salt and then rinse them off, something like that. I mean, What do you do to prep them?
Wash them, cut them, throw them in.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not an unpleasant bitterness. You know,
No. Bitter has its place on the palate. That's why we evolved a special spot in the taste buds for it.
Exactly. It's like beer. Most kids, the first time they taste beer, bah, you know, can't stand it. And then you acquire a taste. Same with coffee.
Oh, that explains a lot. First time I ever tasted beer, I said, not yuck.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that was the same with coffee for me.
Yeah, I liked coffee, too. We see the origins of many of my problems. Of course, I can't cope with caffeine anymore because I liked coffee so much in my youth. They always told me it would stunt my growth. I guess that's why I'm not 7 feet tall.
Ah, yeah. But we will be missing the lovely mushrooms that are like $6 a kilo and for chanterelles.
Is there any limitation on Mia's ability to go back, like to visit relatives, family, that kind of thing?
Apparently, there's a limitation for 1 year, basically until the conditional residency turns into permanent residency. And then after that, yeah, can come and go.
Because I remember John Fox talking about that relative to his application for permanent residency in Australia, that he really couldn't leave the country for a year.
Yeah, there's a one-year limitation. It's possible, of course, if there's an emergency or something, but you have to, you know, file, get special permission in that, and it's a little complicated.
And by the time you get the special permission, the emergency will be over.
Well, there's always that possibility.
Yeah. Hey, let's run over and check in on the stress line, where I think we've got Jim out in Nevada stand. Are you there, Jim?
Yeah, what's up, Bob?
What do you know?
I don't know. I'm just glad we had Arabic numerals instead of Roman numerals. I was just trying to figure out the other day how you do long division with Arabic, Roman numerals.
I got enough trouble with ciphering in Arabic numerals without having to work. No. I mean, VII divided by II. I don't even know where's, of course, there's no decimal point, is there?
I'm not that familiar with it. I remember it wasn't algebra, it was like a math course, and I forget how it goes, but, you know, sometimes if you put the one in front of the V or the X, it's like, okay, you take that one.
Yeah, IX is 9 because it's 1 minus 10. Yeah.
Right. Can you imagine doing like the quadratic equation with Roman numerals?
That'd be a blast.
Or just census taking.
I think for Roman numeral census taking, you just do 1, 2, 3, 4 slash, 1, 2, 3, 4 slash. I mean, we wouldn't want to be using any of those demonic, liberal, atheistic statistics.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was really interesting that those preachers, man, they're mind-boggling. I don't know how anybody can. And those churches are packed full. Is that a mega church he's speaking at? Probably what?
Oh, no. These people are talking on radio programs. They've got a broadcast infrastructure that beggars the beggars belief and defies the imagination.
Mm-hmm. Sad. So sad. I like to try and keep up the mystic, but if, some people don't wake up, I know. Looks like we're doomed. But on the bright side, so, yeah. Oh, and as far as I'm on Social Security, and it helps a lot, but, you know, I got to work on the side. And I'm still not getting rich, and then you can't make over a certain amount. And it took me about, I missed exactly how long it took the other caller, I can't see his name, but, it took me over about a year to get on. you know.
Well, you might find this interesting, Jim. Ohio Governor John Kasich is kind of staked out his territory as the rational, reasonable Republican candidate for governor because he signed on to the Medicaid expansion in Ohio.
Right.
Well, he has declared that Social Security just has to be cut.
And yeah, they're going after it. They're going after it, man.
He said, I'd rather have people be in a position where they're aggravated with me so I can accomplish something than have them love me and accomplish nothing. I'm not there to run a popularity contest. What if I told you your initial benefit was going to be somewhat lower in order to save the program? Would that drive you crazy?
Yeah, especially because all you need to do is take off the cap. Take off the goddamn motherfucking cap, pardon my friends. That's all you got to do. Throw in all taxes that go in. Throwing that Social Security tax, I think that would solve it. That's all. I mean, don't you?
There are some legal issues related to eliminating the cap, because benefits are capped. There's only so much you can make. And so given the makeup of this Supreme Court, if the cap was eliminated and the benefits remained where they were, then some right winger funded by some godforsaken libertarian outfit would conceivably have standing to sue and claim that there was an unjust taking of property without due process.
I kind of understand that, but I don't. So if I'm working for $10 an hour, there's no way I'm going to hit the cap. But if I'm
No, if you're working for $10 an hour, you're going to pay X amount into the system, and at the and when you get to Social Security retirement age, you're going to draw, you know, X out. And if you're working for $20, it's going to be theoretically twice that. I mean, we're speaking broadly here. But if you're making, you know, $72,000 an hour, like a CEO of a corporation, then you would expect to get a commensurate amount back. You see?
There's a logistics problem with that, yeah. That is a good point.
But I mean, I'm still pissed off because I'm part of the generation that was busy working and not paying much attention back when they were screwing me. See, I don't, the previous generations got to say, okay, I'll take my Social Security, I'll take a little bit less at 62, or I can wait till 65 and I'll take more. I gotta wait till I'm 67. Because I've already been screwed in my generation.
Well, I mean.
And we're the ones that they're talking about, you know, because whenever they talk about raising the retirement age to 70, they always say, well, if you're on Social Security now, your benefits will not be touched. Well, I'm not, and that means my generation is going to, you know, we're the people that are being targeted for the age 70 stuff. I'm sorry, Sparky.
Well, I'm already in the system.
Not me.
No, you're in the same pre-screwed for early for easy convenience group as I am, Tim.
Yep.
Well, no, I'm already on it, but I mean, the point I'm wondering is,
you're not on the retirement side of it, though, are you?
No.
Yeah. See,
years older than him.
Yeah, SSI is an entirely different animal from old age Social Security, which is what it's referred to. And Title II, Social Security Disability, is a different animal, too.
Right. So, I mean, I get just under $1,000 a month. That's, you know, it's definitely not enough to live in Denver.
Found that out pretty quick.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's all right in Vegas right now, but, yeah, you got to work on the side, which you're allowed to do. But, but you can't make over $1,000 a month, so basically you're locked into around just under 23,000. You know, you're right at the bottom of the, over the poverty range, I guess, or almost. I might even, I probably should check into, see if I can get food stamps, you know.
If you can, it'll be maybe $35.
What's that?
I said, if you can, it'll probably be like $35.
Okay, that's 35.
Yeah, it's 35 you didn't have, sure.
Yeah.
A month.
All right, man, $35. Give me a 10-pound bag of potatoes, a couple pounds of beef and chicken.
For $35, oh, yeah, you're in Nevada.
What's that?
Wait, you're not going to use your EBT to buy Alaskan king crab legs like Louis Asparagus Gohmert said you are?
That was the stupidest goddamn thing I ever heard. I mean, if I was getting $35 a month in food a week in food stamps, the last thing I would do would be buying expensive food. I would just think, okay, give me some rice. Okay, maybe I'll splurge and get some brown rice.
Live large and get the jasmine or the basmati.
I would just, you know, I could live off base. Well, you know, it would be kind of hard, but I think I could live off for just food, $35 a week. You know, I'd have to.
But not a month.
Well,
something, Bob?
What's that?
Since they went to the card, I can't tell who's on food stamps when I go to the grocery store.
That's because you're not a busybody who's all nosy and stuff. But yeah, you can.
Well, they have the booklets, and you'd have to tear the $5, yeah. $10. You could sit there at the grocery store and go, oh, geez. And then,
yeah,
and they'd have to ring up everything separate.
I remember that?
Yeah,
because certain things. But
I never noticed that anymore. I mean,
can I jump in?
Oh yeah, and welcome to the conversation, Bike Gata.
Thank you. Bike Gata, also known as Janice. Hi, that's okay. Hi. Well, I was interviewing a study participant today, and I don't know if it's been a while since she got food stamps, but she was saying she didn't like using them at the supermarket because everybody could tell she was on food stamps. And I wanted to ask her, well, there's that EBT card they give you now. Can people, if they're nosy, can they look and see that that's a food stamp card? I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen one.
It's pretty easy to tell.
Yeah.
It is. It doesn't look like a credit card at all.
Well, no. It looks exactly the same. The thing is, if you want to be nosy, you look at what they're checking out. And here in Texas, they all got big stickers on them saying WIC approved. And even if they're in an express lane, they're going to make two transactions, one on the card and then one for stuff that the card doesn't cover. So they're going to actually use either two cards or a card in cash.
Well, that's the WIC program, though, isn't it?
Oh.
Well, that's WIC, but I mean...
It's the same with the Lone Star card for in general.
Yeah, y'all got the Lone Star card here in West Virginia. It's the Mountain State card.
And they call it
It's an EBT, but a lot of times they've even got a separate card reader that you use.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, people who are nosy enough to care will be able to figure it out pretty quickly.
Wow.
Well, I haven't noticed here in California.
Yeah, neither have I. I'm in California, too. Also, I don't know about other states, but in California, if you're on SSI, you are automatically ineligible for food stamps. I find that astounding.
I've never heard that. What?
Every one of my study participants, I work on a research study with women, and all of them who are on SSI tell me, well, no, I can't get food stamps. You don't get food stamps if you're on SSI. Or is it SSDI? Now I'm getting...
Might be SSDI.
Maybe it's SSDI. A lot of them have HIV, and maybe it's SSDI.
Well, I do know with every cost, like if you... Because I remember doing the story years and years ago. If you're on Social Security and you're on food assistance too, if you get your COLA, your cost of living adjustment, and your money comes up, your food stamps go down.
Yeah. Well, I keep telling them, you know, these congressional reps, these Republicans, they should have to live on this. They should try it. It's sickening.
Well, I mean, we're talking about $1 a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, at best, that's four packages of ramen every day of your life.
Yeah, great sodium content for your health. Oh.
Sure, and, you know, some pretty ugly carbs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, Tim, I don't mean to be gooning on the ramen.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I don't like
it. Hey, they're 17 cents a piece here.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can have ramen five times a day.
Ooh. There you go.
Assuming you've got access to clean water and something to boil it with.
Yeah.
A microwave and...
A lot of people just soak them in water and eat them without cooking.
Yeah.
They are technically pre-cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, down there, Waggy, you know, something like sun tea. You know, you just stick them in a jug and pour some water on them and let them sit in the sun.
Oh, yeah, that would do it, too. And then get water out of drinking fountain or public restroom.
Yeah,
because you know that's a great way for it to be in the wealthiest nation on earth.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, let me say welcome to the conversation. I'm awfully glad you got in here pretty quick, and your audio sounds great.
Thank you. Thanks, Bob. It's good to be with you and everybody. I'm a little shy. It's my first time, so
pardon me
if I'm a little bashful.
No. You're doing great, and I'm ever so glad to know that you enjoyed my stoned Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III.
That was precious. I loved it. You had me convinced.
So that's what you sound like, huh, Baikata?
Yeah.
Hey, wow.
Dude, after all these years.
Finally.
Yeah.
So is this the combo horn?
Yeah, this is the Horn Malloy Skype chat group.
Ah,
where
this
we
is
have
it.
Friday on the front porch. Yeah.
Right.
And
wow. Yeah. It's pretty kind of sparse here tonight. Where is everybody?
I don't know. It must be good weather somewhere, and everybody's out. Where's Billable Rick?
The 102 right now, so he's
probably... Is he on a date?
Oh, my God.
Oh, Billable Rick? I haven't heard from him. But I know last week he went to a Van Halen concert.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Oh, and you know what? I would love to, you know, because they're doing that reunion tour and everything. I would love to see David Lee Roth doing Jump with his walker.
Huh?
He sent me a message the other day. He said he went to see a Van Halen at the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow.
Hollywood Bowl.
Wow. Oh, it's okay for some. Wow.
But did he make his billable hours goal?
Yes, he did.
You be.
He's probably got a hot date tonight or something.
Yeah, he's got his life back.
Now he's got his billable hours,
and he can, you know, he can just kind of slack along like he did last time, and have to burn the midnight oil for a month. Nah, I'm kidding. I imagine Rick really does bust his hump working a billable hours job in a law firm. Whoa!
And you want me to be a lawyer, huh, Bob?
Oh, why not, Tim?
Oh.
No, actually, I didn't say I wanted you to be a lawyer. I said I wanted you to get a legal education.
Oh.
Because law school, you know, to my way of thinking, law school is the ultimate liberal arts degree.
Huh.
because you
how
have
do you figure?
Yeah. Well, because it takes in everything, because the law touches everything. So what you learn how to do, you learn the way that life interfaces with the law, and after you get through like year one of law school, when they completely rearrange your brain, and you know, by the end of 1L, you see everybody as these little walking lumps of rights and duties. And you learn all about the reasonably prudent person, who is entirely mythical and imaginary, and rides, you know, and rides to work on a unicorn. But it trains you, especially if you're quick minded, it trains you to have a relatively short learning curve with just about anything that you take on. I mean, it's amazing. There are lawyers out there who are really, really good at medical malpractice. And they sound like they went all the way through medical school.
That's a low bar.
And there's a patent attorney.
Isn't there a brain surgeon we've been listening to lately?
Oh, stop it. Oh, dear God.
Dr. Carson.
Yeah, so what if I left a sponge in that woman's brain?
There was sponge for him to begin with.
You know that story, right? The gang over at FYI Live were telling me that. Tom was telling me that earlier. It hit Drudge. And apparently he was doing some brain surgery one day, and he left a sponge inside a woman's head.
I believe it.
Sponge, brain, what's the difference?
Well, surgeons are leaving stuff in people all the time.
There's supposed to be protocols for that. That's why you count in and count out.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And have assistance and everything.
Yeah.
I left a syringe to my grandmother.
Oh.
And a needle.
A syringe?
Ow. Yeah.
I don't leave a mark. About the pain.
He saw the needle inside there and was stuck inside it, so they said, come by, we'll pull it out. My grandma's dead, though. So that was back in the 90s.
Not from that, we hope. Right?
No.
Yeah.
That's a nice old age.
Oh, that's good. I mean,
hey, speaking of attorneys, then please explain John Yoo.
Why is he an attorney? Explain that.
Yeah.
Well, why is he still a lawyer? Yeah.
Why is he still allowed?
Well, the explanation of John Yoo is pretty simple. If you go to a little pissant state law school like I did, you'll learn how to be a lawyer in that state. But if you go to one of those rarefied atmosphere law schools like an Ivy or a Stanford, to a certain extent, Michigan, Virginia, Vandy, Duke, they teach you theoretical law at a level where nothing is forbidden. So instead of teaching you this is the law and this is how you analyze a fact pattern related to that law, and I remember, oh, God, it was years ago now, our dear friend Scott up in Massachusetts and I had a conversation where he kind of laid this out. They teach you instead to find ways to circumvent laws. And so John Yoo's entire existence was predicated upon his ability to find a way whereby we could torture people and say, hey, we're torturing, but it's okay. But I mean, that's what you get at your Harvards and your Yales, and yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, it's like when you said, and I remember you saying this a year or so ago, maybe a little longer ago, about like once you go through 3 years of law school, it totally changes your way of thinking. And I've noticed I've got like two younger brothers, and whenever it's really weird, I mean, I could be talking to them over the phone or just talking to them in person, but maybe it's me, but I always get the feeling I'm on being cross-examined, you know, is that an aspect of being a lawyer?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think that way?
No, absolutely. You just you hone in on the facts, and if it's a difference of opinion, you try to advance your version.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, because I'm not proud of it. And it wasn't something I was doing intentionally, but you know, it's like, you know, did you break the cookie jar? No, you don't say, did you break the cookie jar? You say, you broke the cookie jar, didn't you? And it's not, it's probably not, it's not fun being a lawyer's kid. But by the same token, they're prepared for law school by the time they, you know, by the time they're 12 and a half.
Well, I kind of picked up a little lawyer-ese and stuff. And
well, hell, look at who you are, Jim. I mean, please.
What?
I said, you know, I mean, let's consider your own upbringing. I mean, you had to get some of that from your dad.
I didn't, you know, it's weird. I didn't really notice it with my dad so much, but I guess it's just because I was, I always, you know, loved my dad and looked up to him a whole lot. And I look back and I kind of see points where he might have used that technique, but it's so natural to him. And I noticed it with my two brothers. About the youngest one, he, you know, went through practicing 20 some odd years in the 80s. That one's 15 or so or whatever. But I just noticed, when I'm talking to them, it's almost, I almost feel like I'm on the witness stand when I'm talking to them. And my dad's been dead over 20 years, so all I can do is try and look back. And I'm sure he did, but I mean, I realized that none of the three, you know, my dad, my two brothers, that's the way they were taught to think. In order to survive, not only survive, but to become a lawyer, you have to think that way. You know?
Yeah.
And I even asked my two sister-in-laws about that, and they both said, yeah, they do it all the time, where, you know, they're basically cross-examining, you know, for, you know, how much were these cookies or blah, 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 whatever, minor thing, but it's always in that lawyer tone.
Yeah, tone, yeah, right. But it's also because, you know, you're trained to try to get at the facts,
right?
And so it makes you it tends to, unless you keep a pretty tight leash on it, it makes you pretty intolerant of non-fact based argument.
So what if someone wants to study international law?
I mean, it's a field of study. They're probably better at it at Harvard and Yale than they are at, busted knuckle polytechnic.
And what kind of pre-law would help to get into such a fine, upstanding institution?
Well, there's no such thing as pre-law.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just like there's really no such thing as pre-med. That's what people who think they want say. You want to go to medical school? Get a biology degree, and make sure you get your math
that's
and your.
The nature of the question. That's the nature of the question here.
The two people who did the two groups of people who did the best when I was going through law school were English majors and engineers.
Hmm. Oh. Very good, thank you.
English majors because they could express themselves well. And engineers because they had the analytical mindset, and they often wind up being very different kinds of lawyers.
Imagine so. Engineers, I've also heard, tend to do pretty good in the MBA programs.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Of course, I don't much care for MBA programs. I stand with our buddy in Wisconsin who says it stands for more bigger assholes. But.
Wow, I'm a big asshole.
Doesn't Trump have an MBA from Wharton or something?
Oh, yeah?
I rest my case, said the guy who went to law school. But engineers do well in patent law, products liability law, especially like, well, from a plaintiff or defense standpoint. But things, you know, things where machines are at issue, when they fail and hurt people, that kind of thing.
What kind of law do English majors tend to do good at? Do you know?
No, really, I don't know.
I would have thought personal injury law.
Well, no, they make great appellate lawyers. Because of the copious amount of writing involved. They make good meat and potatoes lawyers.
Hmm.
You know, whether the people who handle, you know, divorces, will, you know, the little, you know, the lawyer on the lawyer in the corner office on Main Street and Main Street and Gardenia in, you know, they're in Busted Knuckle.
Hmm.
And they do wills and they do divorces and they do anything that comes through the door.
And trust attorneys.
Truck trust attorneys.
Just trust attorneys, no trucks. But yeah, think quick on your feet, lawyers. They're good. Your political science types will often go into government stuff. I mean, for instance, if you're counsel for a committee in Congress, you can make more money than the actual Congress critters make.
Wow. I didn't know you had gone to law school, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh.
It was a very long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Oh. Wow.
Well, if I was a lawyer, I wouldn't do civil rights.
Well, but people go in saying one thing and they come out saying something entirely different.
I find that fascinating, though.
I mean, criminal law is fascinating. And people will go in and say, well, I don't ever want to represent anybody who's guilty. The lawyer doesn't know. You specifically don't know. You ask your client, you know, what happened, but you don't say, no, now tell me what really happened. And if they've come to you, in hopes of beating a charge, they're not going to tell you, well, I did it with my little hatchet.
I guess it's nothing like it was how to get away with murder, huh?
Nah.
Yeah. I like that show, but even though it's fake.
Well, you guys, I'm sorry we got to the conversation so late, but I'll remind people that the Horn Molloy Skype chat room will probably continue onward through the Molloy rerun, and he's a rerun, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, best of.
Yeah, yep. And then
tonight and Monday night.
Oh, Monday too.
It'll pick up in earnest. The Horn Molloy Skype chat will pick up in earnest at about 12:05 Eastern time, right, Sparky?
Yeah, about we try.
Right.
9:05.
I mean, we've been doing it every Friday night since 2009.
Wow. God, that's amazing when you think about it. But I appreciate everybody participating this evening, and pardon me.
You'd like a report from Waggy.
Oh, absolutely. And
I don't know where everybody else was tonight.
Well, we'll have to get a report from Roger, too, hopefully in short order. Thanks for tolerating my extended filibobster, too. And thanks, everybody, beginning with Carol Baker. And through Dr. John's challenge, and thank you to VJ, and thank you to Thomas. And there's a challenge on the table. I'll remind folks, a $25 challenge for Steve in New York, who will match the next $25 that comes in. And that'll put us right at having raised like around $190 of the $200 goal that we try to come up with every evening. Right now we're about $60, $70 from having that done. No, it's $60. And some strange sense. But thank you, one and all. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Bhagata, for wandering by. I hope you'll be back again sometime soon.
I will try when I can. Thank you so much. It's great to meet you all.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Back for more and Monday.